We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Round one of the NFL draft is in the books, guys, and everything has changed. Dynasty players all over the place are going crazy because they don't know what to do. All the worst cases happened for a lot of players, maybe a couple of good ones, but the RotoWire crew is here to untangle that and give, you know, biggest winners, biggest losers. I'm Alan Soslowski. We got John McKechnie. We have Mario Puig and, of course, Joe Bartle, and possibly soon we'll be joined by Jim Coventry. Mario, I'll start with you right here. Right off top of head, what is the headline of the first round?
I'd say it's the Michael Penix selection. It's not the highest impact on the field. It might be the lowest impact on the field pick of the first round, but it's a crazy story to me. I can't remember anything quite like it. I mean, even in the cases of like Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, or whatever other, you know, case like that, Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love, I've seen people invoke, and that's not it either, because Rodgers was kind of burning his way out of Green Bay at the time, even though it took a couple of years for him to finish the job. In the case of Cut the B, it was like an actual planned transition. Whereas I don't know if there's a plan with the Atlanta thing. He just kind of took a quarterback at eighth after giving another quarterback a 4-year, $180 million contract. So
with no trade clause, by the way, no trade clause in there too.
Coming up, and maybe they'll have the head start on that. I don't know.
John, no trade clause on that contract as well. I mean, it's not like any professional mockers had Penix going before pick eight. They knew that when they gave Kirk Cousins a $100 million guaranteed no trade contract. Who's going to be the starting quarterback? I just drafted Kirk Cousins in a super flex league and spent the last month collecting him. Am I in trouble?
No, I honestly don't think so. I think that this is the Falcons playing some weird game of chess that we've never seen before, that hasn't been invented yet. We hear the 3D chess, that this isn't that. It's not so advanced. I don't really understand what the Falcons were thinking. There were just some like all-time spin zones from Terry Fontenot saying, if we never play Michael Penix, good. That's actually good for us. When it turns out we spent the eighth pick on someone that never plays a down for us, because hey, that means that we're winning. And it's like, yes, I understand the sentiment there, that would mean that the Kirk Cousins signing worked out and the Falcons were a perennial playoff team and challenger in the NFC. But at the same time, wouldn't you want to like just make the team around Kirk Cousins better? Wouldn't that be a more pragmatic use of the eighth overall pick? Why don't you make the defense a little bit better? You're like always in the bottom five in total sacks. Why don't you consider DJ Dallas, to consider trading back? Because I'm not sure if I buy the notion that I think James Palmer tweeted out that like five other teams were looking to move up into the top 10 to get Michael Penix. That's all, you know, you can say that after the fact. I'm not sure that I'm totally buying it. So Cousins is still the guy in Atlanta, and I think if you have some early dynasty investments in Michael Penix, your best hope is that the Falcons just kind of leverage this as some sort of trade chip to somewhere else, and someone else takes the bait.
Joe, Michael Penix will probably not be a first round pick in Superflex Dynasty rookie drafts, which kick off. Is he a must draft early in the second round now? What's going to be your takeaway for how this thing whole plays out?
I'll answer that question, but we haven't really discussed this, and I think it's at least worth mentioning. Have we ruled out the tampering issues with Kirk Cousins that there could be something else that we don't know as the collective audience that the Falcons and possibly the Vikings know too, because that is literally the only explanation why you take Michael Penix number 8 overall. By his age 26 season, that would be theoretically the first time that the Falcons could get off that contract and not have to give a whole lot of dead cap guarantee money in the result. Like, that's you, Alan, and Jim were live when that happened, and I had posted that in the chat because you were mind blown, and rightfully so, that Michael Penix went 8 overall. I mean, like, well, it could that be it? Because we had Adam Schefter earlier say, well, the possible tampering rules haven't actually played out correctly yet, and we'll see it happen later on. I mean, that's my only thought, is to maybe the Falcons know something we don't, and that's why the GM has to kind of cover his tail when he's answering those questions. But if it stands as it is, and Michael Penix is going to be benched for 2 years at minimum for Kirk Cousins, I don't think I'm taking him in the second round. Like, in rookie redrafts, there was already questions about what his talent is. There's injury stuff as well too, within that. There's no guarantee he plays another 10 years after that. No, I will not be investing picks in him.
Jim, I was talking to you, Joe just pointed out about Michael Penix. Well, I thought maybe, I couldn't believe it. I was in like self-denial here. I thought maybe we were going to see a deal between the Raiders and the Atlanta that just couldn't get finished. And that's why they said, just take Penix. We'll figure it out later. No, that's not the case here. Which one of these quarterbacks do you believe is going to start day one, and how is it going to play out for Atlanta this year? And you know what? And from a dynasty further on.
All right, so The Athletic kind of broke some news about this. Kirk Cousins was told they were going to take a quarterback, but it's going to be in the later rounds. Mm. And they were surprised. Cousins was surprised they took him earlier. So Cousins knew this was coming down the pike, just not Penix in the first round. Cousins was a little disappointed that they took him, you know, that early and didn't improve the team. Cousins also said in March he could take dropbacks and throw passes, but leaving the pocket in March was an issue. That's 5 to 6 months. Cousins is a starter week one. He'll be able to move. He's not going to be a big pocket mover. He'll start in week one. Not even
Mario.
Close.
Yeah, that's good, since I spent the last month collecting a lot of Kirk Cousins in my dynasty league. So I do like to hear that. Mario, real quick here, you'd mentioned that this is dissimilar. I just like, and then we'll wrap this up because I want to move on to Ricky Pearsall. Explain to people why this is different than the Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers dynamic very quickly.
Well, basically that situation started with a cold war between Aaron Rodgers and the GM, Brian Gutekunst. And Gutekunst was kind of trying to make his own exit plan from the Aaron Rodgers situation, whereas the Falcons went out and signed Kirk Cousins and probably lied to him about how they were going to run the team in order to get his agreement to sign with them. So they are, even like the tampering thing would be crazy to me, because it's like taking Penix 8th overall, if there's some sort of tampering, axe that's going to fall down, that would make sense if the penalty was you lose Kirk Cousins now. You know, it doesn't make any sense to just, oh, let's just get a backup for Kirk when our team sucks and that'll be good. I don't know. I think there's also just the distinct, obvious lack of coherent planning anyway, that the Falcon, they can't give you the reason that they did it. You know, the reason they give is like, this sounds like almost a person lying.
Right. My favorite video was Terry Fano explaining to Arthur Blank what they're doing. And Arthur Blank just like looking like this, like, wait, tell me again. So, all right, we'll move on. That has everybody on a lot of tilt. It'll be a hot topic. Johnny McKechnie, Ricky Pearsall, I think was a surprise first round pick at the University of Florida to the San Francisco 49ers. I guess one. All right. He's there now. We have to adjust our thinking, John. So Ricky Pearsall, first round rookie pick in our dynasty superflex rookie drafts here. And also, I want you to touch a little bit on which wide receiver do you think is out the door today?
So, yeah, you know, it all comes down to that second point, right? Where as it stands, the 49ers like pass catching rotation is so accounted for that as it currently stands. Like I did the math. And like 78% of the targets we were going to the big four between Ayuk, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, and Christian McCaffrey. So as it stands, there's no room for Pearsall to do anything of value. I mean, anyone that used to like Juwan Jennings, like, it learned that lesson the hard way, right? So we got to see if and when the Niners move either Ayuk or Debo over the course of this weekend. And then we can take it a step further. I actually think that it's going to be Debo that's on the move and not Brandon Ayuk, which has been, you know, kind of bandied about over the last couple of weeks or during the offseason. So let's say 20% of the targets open up in San Francisco. I think it's a bit hasty to say that Pearsall's ready to just take all 20% of that. Like, I think that he's going to have to work his way into it. I think they obviously have confidence that he has that ability. I'm sold on him as a prospect. That I wouldn't have taken him over A.D. Mitchell or Ladd McConkey, but at the same time, the Niners obviously are confident in Pearsall's route running ability, his hands, all those things. Check out the short area quickness, the leaping ability are all there with Pearsall if you look at the numbers. So I think he can be a success in the NFL, but as it stands, where I'm taking him among the rookie pecking order, the answer will be different once that trade comes down. But assuming that it does, I think a later first round pick in rookie drafts, definitely makes sense for Pearsall, which is obviously a jump up from where it would have been coming into this week.
Joey Bartel. Look at that beautiful smile right there. Isn't it? Look at it. Pierce, did you see the reaction video of CJ Stroud when Ricky Pearsall was taken in round one? He said, "Oh my God." He goes, "I wanted him on our team. That guy is elite."
Is there ever any quarterback that would say otherwise with those? Like, I want to see the reaction video where the stud quarterback's like, F that guy. And I don't want him at all.
He could have said nothing. CJ Stroud, again, he said he was hoping Houston got Pearsall. That's what I'm saying. And he did the same reaction for Tank Dell last year. So I guess that doesn't sway you at all. So lightning quick round before we wrap up Ricky Pearsall. What do you think? Is he going to be fantasy relevant this year? Assuming, let's use the premise that Debo moves on.
Yeah, and I disagree. I think Ayuk and Debo stay one more season for the Niners. But to John's point, I think Pearsall is still a first-round pick in super flex drafts. You look at the six quarterbacks, you'll throw in the three receivers, maybe Brock Bauer. So already we're pushing it close to 10, and there's a few prospects that we like that could be taken in the second round along with those running backs. But I think the idea of having a stud receiver in a Kyle Shanahan offense that has invested resources in that player is almost a guaranteed layup. There's going to be fantasy success at some point down the road. So whether it be this year that you see the return on late first-round pick value, or if it's year 2, 3, 4, 5, like, I was never a fan of Brandon Ayuk, and I have to admittedly, put my tail between my legs and say, yeah, that's going to end up being a good fantasy value in both Dynasty and Redraft, whatever else. I think Pearsall, I'm trusting in Kyle Shanahan, not when it comes to Super Bowl performances, but fantasy production. Kyle Shanahan is going to be my guy through and through, and I'll take Pearsall at the back end of the first round every single time, especially if Ayuk and Samuel is there, because I know I'm going to get value at some point down the road.
Jim Coventry, Jaden Daniels, what ended up being the pick for the Washington Commanders. Is there a case to be made that for fantasy football, he should be QB1 and not Caleb Williams?
Based on the potential for rushing, yes, that would be a big deal in fantasy football. Now, remember, Jaden Daniels is about 210 pounds, so durability in the run game could be an issue. Smaller quarterbacks, the more they run, the more potential hits they could take. I'm not sure how elusive in the open field Daniels will be, but you have Terry McLaurin. I still believe in Jahan Dotson. He was in a very rough situation last year with the offense being run by Eric Bieniemy, and then it's Sam Howell in there for a while. It was problematic. But the weapons he has, and Daniels can throw downfield. That could unlock Terry McLaurin. So, yeah, I do think with the rushing ability, you could make the case that he could be this rookie number one quarterback this year.
Mario, the next pick off the board was Drake May. He goes to the New England Patriots. I think that it was kind of a consensus thing to say that I don't want the New England quarterback for fantasy football. But do you like Drake May enough to still draft him in a super flex rookie format?
I think so. You just might need to be patient with it because the New England roster around him is trash, and we don't know what kind of coach Gerard Mayo is going to turn out to be. I like him enough, but you can't tell where it's going to go. So I think even if Drake May is clearly better than Jaden Daniels, and I think he very much is, he'll have such a more difficult task, even though I think Daniels doesn't have the greatest situation. I mean, he's got Cliff Kingsbury. They have no left tackle at Washington, so it's kind of bad for both of them. But yeah, when DeMario Douglas is your wide receiver one, how are you going to project 4,200 yards passing? Like, the under is going to hit. I will say, in May's case, though, people are underrating how much he might run. He might be about as much a volume runner at the NFL as Daniels, if only because May is less likely to get hurt. I mean, Daniels weighed 170 pounds as 22-year-old when he got to LSU, so he'll probably play at more like 200. That's the way May would have to catch him, assuming the Patriots don't add at least two starting caliber receivers.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rushing stats from Drake May, and you know, a little over 1,000 yards. Yeah, a little over 1,000 yards.
Josh Allen kind of throw it 36 times, run it 10 times. He'll do it.
And by the way,
his brother's Luke May. Like he, like Drake May, comes from a very athletic, you know, family tree. Like he can definitely run.
By the way, very disrespectful to KJ Osborne to not consider him the elite wide receiver on that team. John McKechnie, with the Chargers obviously going run heavy, they get rid of their wide receivers. They're right now, before the second round, they have Josh Palmer. They have Quentin Johnson, who failed last year. They take the elite tackle, right? They get Gus Edwards. Maybe they'll add another running back. J.K. Dobbins there. What the hell is we going to do with Justin Herbert for fantasy football? Is he a top 12 quarterback?
I'm not so sure. Like, I'm definitely taking Caleb Williams over Justin Herbert this year in redraft. And I'm not really thinking that hard about it, because I think that, you know, it's not just the personnel, but think about who the offensive coordinator is. I'm a Ravens fan. I'm very familiar with what Greg Roman offenses look like. And I think, you know, I respect Harbaugh and the Chargers saying, you know, enough of this. We're going to throw it a million times a game. Like we're going to hit you in the mouth. We're going to run the football. We're going to build the trenches, everything like that. I like that aesthetically, but you know, as it stands, I think first of all, the days of Justin Herbert dropping back 40 times a game are pretty much over, at least as
John,
long as Roman.
John, how many under over 525 pass attempts for Herbert this year?
Give me the under.
Jim, under over 525. Mario.
That seems like a low number. I'll take the over, but I'd have to look at some stats before I knew anything.
Joey B.
Yeah, under for me too, for sure.
Wow.
So, wow. I mean, how many passes per game is that? I'm not good. Is that like 31?
Let's figure that he plays 17 games. Jim Coventry, do the math in your head.
He's right about 31, right about there.
That seems about right.
That sounds low to me, honestly. I mean, like, Jalen Hurts threw more than that last year. I don't know. It's just kind of easy to hit that number, I think. Like, they fall behind in three games. He throws it 40 times in each one, you know, even if every other game they throw it 28 times. I don't know.
All right, Joe, let's talk a little Rome Odunze. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to really want him in redraft. I think that, you know, sure, later round, but if he's still going in, like, the seventh round, I, you know, maybe some teams if you're doing like a portfolio, but obviously his perceived value is going to drop. Do you think that like the dynasty market, like rookie drafters, might give him a pass? Similar, remember CeeDee Lamb was blocked by Dallas. What's Rome Odunze's outlook in the current setup for dynasty long term?
Yeah, so I might even disagree on the notion for redraft. The Marvin Harrison going in mid-second round, and I don't know what his best ball ADP was, you know, even last week, but if that was what his best ball ADP was for the past couple weeks prior to it, felt ridiculous to me given the talent guys. And even like a Malik Nabers was a fourth or fifth round, and John DeMario would probably know better because they've had the pulse on that for a while.
Marvin Harrison was going mid-second, and he's ridiculous on the rise right now.
Ridiculous to me. And Malik, and especially Malik Nabers now with Daniel Jones throwing to him for a half season, or Drew Lock, whatever it looks like, that's gross to me too. So if you're saying of those three receivers, Marvin Harrison probably has more fantasy value redraft the full season, but the better value is going to be Odunze. And I like the way that Caleb Williams is reacting. The Bears seem to have an inclination they're going to take Odunze because Caleb Williams have been teasing that with the pilot stuff on Twitter and whatever else. I feel like that had been told to Caleb Williams at some point earlier on that they're going to get Odunze if he falls to that. And I like him. Even three receivers can have fantasy value in an offense with a quarterback that can facilitate. With Keenan Allen's great, obviously. I think Cole Kmet takes a hit. DJ Moore could be more of your deep threat. Odunze is going to have enough value specifically in the red zone where I don't mind him in the seventh or eighth for redraft. But to your question, we had done that rookie mock draft like a month ago with another other partner and sponsor. I forget who it was or what group that was. And I had taken Odunze third. I took him over Jaden Daniels. And you had said, hey, did you intend to do that? That must have been a mistake. And I'm like, no, I actually think Odunze is really good and that works out well for me. I would backtrack on it now. But I think talent wise, I feel confident Odunze, for the course of his career, will be a more proficient fantasy player than I think Jaden Daniels will be. And whether it be injury or if it's because the Commanders just are going to run things amok like they always do, or they can't get weapons, or Daniels isn't good. There's too many reasons why I think Jaden Daniels won't be a fantasy success, and too many reasons why I think Odunze could be a staple for that passing attack when Keenan Allen's gone or DJ Moore or whatever else.
Jim, what are you seeing with Odunze?
I have a very interesting comp to make here. Shane Waldron coached the Seahawks last year. Now he's coaching the Bears. That was the Jackson Smith and Jigba spotty coach last year. Well, Metcalf saw 119 targets. Lockett saw 122. The snaps are pretty much even. They're both in the 785 range. Smith and Jigba, 639, not bad, but 93 targets. And when you look at his offense, Kenneth Walker is probably a better running game than the Bears have with DeAndre Swift. Geno Smith, I have to say, the way he played last year, I think Caleb Williams is going to be an upgrade over that. So I think you have a bigger passing pie than you had, but Waldron showed you could support the three receivers. And Smith and Jigba, it was only 628 yards and four touchdowns, but the 93 targets was huge. And I think that could even go up a bit because we kind of saw that model. I just wanted to add that. So I do think Odunze does have some redraft value for that reason.
I wonder if he's going to fall. Like, Mario, just if you're on the clock, right, and just say a tight end premium format, like 1.5, nothing crazy, and you just need good players on your fantasy team. You're up on the clock at 107. Brock Bowers or Rome Odunze for fantasy? For dynasty.
Odunze, but part of that is I'm so sick about the Bowers landing spot. But Odunze, I think in Dynasty is a clear buy because, I mean, Keenan Allen's like 31 or 32. He's been hurt much of his career, even though he's had a good few years or whatever. Odunze is sick, by the way. He's going to be awesome. And if Caleb Williams is the quarterback that most people think he is, Odunze will be, I don't know, a 1,200-yard receiver by his third season, I think.
Odunze or Neighbors, Mario and John? Because that's one I think Neighbors is more interesting to me. Well, Neighbors. No, I think you're biased as a New York.
Well,
fan.
Look, you're going to want to buy low on Neighbors in like November because there's going to be tons of footage of him getting pissed off on the Giants sideline. He might like throw his helmet because Daniel Jones is terrible and Drew Lock might be a little better, but he's still just a total, you know, knuckleball thower. So, yeah, Neighbors is really talented, but he's also very young, and he has trash quarterbacks that he has holding him down for a couple of years.
John McKechnie, did you know that Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country? Prize Picks is really simple to play, guys. I can make picks and submit my entry in 60 seconds or less. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in, okay? And also, RotoWire right now has our Prize Picks tool. It's been updated. I don't even know a lot of this stuff about baseball. I just use the tool and I've been winning some money. I mean, you know, obviously anything can happen, but use the Prize Picks tool. I'll link it in this video description below. And remember, there's quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players with stat types are what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code ROTOPOD. That's ROTOPOD, ROTOPOD, for your first deposit, and they'll match it up to $100. That's promo code ROTOPOD. First deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. You know what else is easy, John McKechnie? Saying that Bo Nix is the new GOAT. I mean, yeah. Jim Coventry told me this guy was probably going to be a third round pick. He was exaggeration for clarification. He just doesn't like him. Talk about the upside case, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of negativity here on Bo Nix. I'm forcing you. What is, for fantasy football now, pick 12? If drafters in the first round of their rookie drafts get lucky at pick 8, pick 9, and take Bo Nix, what are they in for?
Well, I think Nix had a really interesting college career. He was like the chosen one at Auburn. His dad played there, didn't work out. His last 2 years at Oregon were pretty insane. He completed 75% of his passes with a 9.2 YPA, 74 touchdowns in that span. Also ran for 20 touchdowns. I think that's an important detail to remember. And I think we're going to get some nice clarification here because, look, if he's not beating out Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson, then we just know we can move on. But I think that there's he has like a clearer path to starting the whole season than, say, J.J. McCarthy does. And he's got more rushing ability than J.J. McCarthy does. So it might be ugly. And there's definitely some warts to Nix's game. But at the same time, you know, we're talking about fantasy. We're talking about, you know, numbers go up. And I think that there's a chance, as long as Cortland Sutton is still there, maybe they get some more help in the receiver room. Maybe Marvin Mims can take a step forward. I think, you know, as far as like a late round dart in best ball drafts, I think I'm going to have some Knicks shares just in case. I know that, you know, the Broncos are what they have been. The Sean Payton offense doesn't mean what it used to, but I don't know. I think that it's hasty to just write Knicks off from this class.
Joe Bartle, there's the old joke that Bo Nix throws sideways, right? Doesn't even throw it vertical down the field. So, I mean, he's going to be their starter, right? Presumably, since this is Sean Payton's guy, taken way ahead of where the consensus thought he would go. What's the fantasy football upside for him? I mean, where do you see him ranked? Just even in like redraft, QB, what and why?
Yeah. So my answer to it is I think Marvin Mims actually becomes the most valuable asset from that draft pick. The way that I envision Bo Nix being successful is not so much Cortland Sutton. I think Sutton's a good player. It's that Marvin Mims becomes the player that Sean Payton had kind of boasted about him being last year when they took him in the second round, even though they had Jerry Jeudy. It was like an oddball pick at the time. But when you think about what Sean Payton wants to use, and I think from a head coach perspective, he has such an ego that doesn't matter if those guys won't get you wins in the NFL. They just have to produce, and Sean Payton's going to be able to pat himself on the back and make another movie with Kevin James and be like, oh, I got it right with Bo Nix and Marvin Mims, and we're 3-14. This is really cool. Netflix, sign me up. So that's the bigger value for Marvin Mims. I don't know about Bo Nix. I mean, if you're doing redraft, he's got to be around quarterback 23, 25. So John, you know, late round best ball pick. He'll have value for the next 2 weeks because people are all excited just about taking these guys. But when you literally project it out, he has to stay healthy, but also is going to have to get the rushing floor and then pass in offense that doesn't seem like it's really keyed to be able to be successful and get close to 3,800 passing yards. I'm lower from a redraft perspective on Bo Nix, but I think Sean Payton's ego will make that guy play the entire year even if he isn't successful.
Jim, I know that you didn't like Bo Nix, so throw the cold water on him now. How does this go wrong?
So the first thing is they redesigned their offensive line to be a run-based line last year. Now, Javonte Williams coming back from injury, not impressive. We saw some good stuff from Jaleel McLaughlin as well. I do think they're still designed to be a run-based team. And with the receiver room, Sutton, like we said, Josh Reynolds, Joe mentioned Marvin Mims, Tim Patrick missed the last two seasons. The last one, I believe, was an Achilles. So that's going to be problematic. And Greg Dulcich hardly played last year. So here, when we look at the players, I think it's still heavy run. I think that with the Sean Payton model is to get that number one receiver, try to scheme him open. Now, Sutton was more downfield last year. It may be a little bit more varied this year because I think that's ultimately how Payton would prefer to use his number one. Joe mentioned Marvin Mims. I think back to the Sean Payton days when he had all those speedy deep threats, Devery Henderson, and there's like five other ones, and they would get their deep shots on occasion, but they were part of a menu and a package. It wasn't a stabilizing part of the offense, but it was clearly something that was schemed up on a semi-regular basis. I still think there's going to be an alpha run offensive passing attack through Sutton. Sutton should see more targets and probably a higher PPR floor. He was touchdown dependent last year, but Bo Nix, it really is not a great receiver room for him to really do great things.
I wonder if this means, guys, that Javonte Williams could be seeing like 55 plus receptions this year, right? I mean, it's, you know, he's going to be a forgotten player in fantasy, but he could end
until he tears his ACL. And
well, there you go. There you go. But yeah, I mean, look at Rashad White last year, right? He was like a seventh round pick. It's so easy to see Javonte having a similar fantasy season in that sense. Mario, I want to move on to Brian Thomas. I love the landing spot. I love this for Trevor Lawrence. Talk about, you know, because he was wide receiver 4 by consensus, Thomas, but man, did he have a lot of haters. What is the updated? How should we be thinking about Brian Thomas for fantasy football?
I think Thomas is a somewhat limited receiver in the sense that he won't be able to threaten at all levels from all alignments. There's certain plays that if you give him them, he's just kind of not going to do anything, or he's going to get locked up, or he's just going to kind of run his way into traffic and not find a way out. But when you keep him on the sideline, or when you in general keep him downfield, he can run from the slot a little bit, but you don't want him running much other than like post routes and fade routes from there. But when you get him into space and you get him toward the sideline and downfield, he's very much in his element there. And that's specifically the parts of the field that the Jaguars really needed to add something. I think also Trevor Lawrence, not that he throws high exactly, but there's a certain range. There's an ability to kind of like access certain points that Trevor Lawrence has that very few quarterbacks do. And it helps to have someone with a real catch radius who has the range to just cover so much field and you know, teleport from point A to point B. Thomas can do that when he gets into the open field. And I think especially if defenses are crashing down a bit on, you know, ETN in the run game, Evan Ingram after catching like 120 passes or whatever last year, Christian Kirk, mostly a slot guy. Gabe Davis shouldn't be a downfield receiver, even though the Bills use him that way. So there's all this, there's only so much space cleared for Thomas, but it is definitely his space. And I think there's volume limitations there, but there's also the possibility of much like at LSU, high yards per target, high touchdown percentage, especially if Lawrence can take the next step, which I would jump on board with that. I think Trevor Lawrence is sick, but yeah, the Press Taylor part, that's what makes things confusing for me, because he'll get you a 50 cent return for every dollar of talent you have.
Yeah. Let's stick with Brian Thomas for a minute here. I love that take, Mario. John, is there going to be like an immediate runway for Brian Thomas, or do you think he's going to be one of those players where you take him in the first round of your rookie dynasty draft, he stalls out a little bit and people start, you know, buy low? I mean, what do you think is the early return, September and October, for Thomas?
I don't think we're looking at a fast start here. You know, it took till his junior year to really do anything at LSU. And I think it's hasty to think that he's going to just hit the ground running, despite, you know, the momentum that he built up from this past year. And obviously being 6'3", runs the 4.33, like that's all well and good. But Christian Kirk is a target hog. They spent some money in the offseason acquiring Gabe Davis. You also have Evan Ingram. Ideally, Press Taylor isn't going to budget 143 targets to Evan Ingram next year. But I think that, you know, we're going to see a lot of Thomas just running down the field, decoy. And obviously, like, I love Trevor Lawrence, and I think that he's going to be able to connect on some of those deep shots. But the week-to-week to consistency, like for redraft, I don't really know if I'm going to have a lot of Brian Thomas. I think the spike weeks will be okay. We can draw a similar parallel to Xavier Worthy later. But I'm worried about a slow start for Brian Thomas before he really gets going. And I think his particular role is one that is going to be extremely big play dependent.
Joe, I thought that John was about to use the ultimate fantasy football cliche there. He's better in best ball. You know who's better? You know who's better in best ball, Mario? Everyone.
Not the players who can't have the spike weeks.
Well,
Thomas, if he's what I'm worried about is like Marvin Mims kind of numbers from last year, right? but just better, you know? Like Mims had the games with like three targets, 104 yards, and then three targets the next week, zero. That's the kind of theme that you might get with Thomas, but I think it'll be a much higher floor, less, not quite as much volatility as Mims' rookie year, both because the quarterback is better and the rookie receiver's going to play, I don't know, at least 700 snaps.
You see how Mario sticks up for you when I try to crap on you, John? You should give him, you know, give him a virtual kiss later.
He knows. He's my guy.
Hey, Joe, John brought up Xavier Worthy, man. Explain why the Bills handed him on a silver platter to the Kansas City Chiefs, who they're trying to beat to win the AFC.
The theme of this draft, if it wasn't the egregious quarterback selections, was every player you might have liked went to the worst spot possible. Right? I think Brian Thomas getting neutered by Press Taylor, it's like it's the Bart Simpson meme, say the line, Press Taylor's going to screw us all over. Okay, cool. You have Brock Bowers going to the Raiders inexplicably. Well, that's not fun. You have Xavier. Yeah, I know Mario's upset about that. You have Xavier Worthy, who I think could have been a really interesting offensive piece in redraft, in rookie drafts, whatever else. But then I think is kind of blocked by Marquise Brown. Jim and I talked about this last night when that pick came live, is Marquise Brown for 1 year, I think, will do things more efficiently and better. It's not like the Chiefs are going to bump out the Justin Watson inexplicable snaps for Xavier Worthy and Marquise Brown. Like, you'd figure one of those guys fills in for MVS and the other one sort of redshirts. And I don't think they're going to redshirt Marquise Brown. So Xavier Worthy doesn't have a whole lot of fantasy value. I talked about Ricky Pearsall earlier, but if Ayuk and Deebo Samuel stay there, that's another one that kind of waits a little bit longer too, no matter how much you like their fantasy value. So the Bills making that decision. And then again, I mean, we could talk about it in a little bit, trading out of pick 32 for Xavier Leggett for the Panthers, bumping up one spot. I think the Bills have correctly identified that they are maybe in the downswing of a soft rebuild, and accumulating as many cheap assets as they can get is the correct call, no matter if you're giving the Chiefs a better offensive weapon or not. Xavier Worthy would not have been able to function in that Joe Brady offense, and I don't think Josh Allen would have capitalized in the same way that Patrick Mahomes did. So I'm not concerned that the Bills made that choice to give Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs. My bigger concern is when does Xavier Worthy become fantasy relevant? Because I don't know if it's going to be this year.
Jim, you and I often talk about the psychology of drafters being just as important as the player analysis, right? Don't you think that dynasty players are going to want Chiefs wide receiver? And how can we capital? Well, yeah. I mean, how can we capitalize on that? I mean, are you taking Brian Thomas clearly over Xavier Worthy? Where are you going to basically rank Worthy amongst this wide receiver group for fantasy football?
So here's the thing we have to look at. Andy Reid has never met a pass play he didn't like. But in the last couple of years, he's had to go to the run way more than he's ever wanted to because they didn't really have the full receiving group for them to maximize what Mahomes wants to do. I really think they kind of put a band together here. Like you said, Marquise Brown is in. Rashee Rice may miss a little time with a potential suspension. But now you add Worthy to the mix and Kelce. All of a sudden, we might see Patrick Mahomes go back to throwing the ball at an extremely high rate. And we know when Mahomes does that, there's something to go around for everybody. Now, at 165 pounds with Xavier Worthy, we might see some of those routes we saw from Valdes-Scantling, different size body and all that, of course, but slot, you know, verticals from the slot, we could see that. Worthy, of course, to get to the outside, but I think he's going to be one to stretch the defense. We know they're going to see a ton of two high shells. So that said, you want to keep putting pressure on those shells, and Worthy, I think, will open up more room underneath for Kelce, Marquise Brown on drags, Rashee Rice. I think that's Worthy's best role. But so in terms of you're drafting Brian Thomas, he'll see more targets than Worthy. He'll be a bit more stable of a player. Worthy will have those spike weeks, but I don't think it's going to be steady, bankable target volume.
Before I have Mario vent and have a therapy session on Brock Bowers, one more question for you, Jim Coventry. Lightning round here. Brian Thomas, do you share the same sentiment as the panel that maybe a slow start, but a good longer-term asset?
Yes, right now he's a stretch Z. He's a downfield threat and not a lot of wiggle to his game. And that's going to be problematic. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a slow start, like the guy said. Completely agree.
All right, Mario, lay down a little bit. Put your feet up on the couch. I'm not as pessimistic about Brock Bowers as you are because, I mean, he's pass catcher. I mean, what is it? Is it that they don't have a quarterback in your judgment? What is caused this pessimism about Brock Bowers? Because I thought the landing spot was like, it's better than the Jets where he was projected to go.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I guess even in Aaron Rodgers' weird current state, I assumed he would be much more effective as a passer this year than
Rodgers with the Rodgers with the rookies and the tight ends. That he doesn't have a long history.
Well, the thing is, Brock Bowers is not a normal tight end. I mean, he got to Georgia as a true freshman, started raking immediately. So he won't have the same application that rookie tight ends normally do. Also with the Jets, it just would have been so easy to plug him in. It's like, yeah, Conklin, you're mostly a chip blocker now. Bowers, you're the slot guy. That's that. Whereas with the Raiders, Bowers should be fine. It's honestly more so that I just think it's a stupid pick because they already have Michael Mayer, who now they're gonna have to just try to make him like a Foster Moreau or something. Like, that's just ridiculous. That's objectively inefficient use of team resources. Mayer could have been an 850, 900 yard tight end for them this year, and now he's going to be a 300 yard one that they took in the early second round a year ago. so that they can have another 13th overall pick tight end, basically be the same thing he would have been anyway. Tom Telesco got fired from the Chargers it took him like 8 years or whatever to get fired from the Chargers despite doing everything wrong every single year. He's the same guy he's always been. He's just an absolute clown. Unbelievable that he has a job.
Like the Raiders beat the Chargers by like 1,000 points on the Thursday night, and then they're like, we want some of that over here.
Hey, John, Brock Bowers is tight end 2 in Dynasty Startups. Tight end 2. Never played a snap of NFL football. This is held true. He hasn't dropped yet. Is this the right ranking if we're looking out? I mean, if he's an all-time prospect, then it's fine. But right now, other than Sam Laporta, drafters are reaching ahead into the second or third round to take Brock Bowers.
He's different. You know, to Mario's point, from his freshman year onward, he, you know, led Georgia in receiving at 13 receiving touchdowns as a true freshman, you know, beating out guys like A.D. Mitchell, remember him, Jermaine Burton, and Ladd McConkey, all of those guys. Brock Bowers was outproducing them immediately on that Georgia national championship team. And, you know, it continued all the way his next couple of years. We don't have the athletic testing for him, but frame wise, very similar to Sam Laporta. Obviously the landing spot with, you know, either Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew having to make it work that way is a little bit tough. And Davante Adams is still, you know, going to be that number one target there, but that didn't, you know, with Laporta's case, Amon-Ra St. Brown is still the guy in Detroit, but Laporta was still able to put up the best rookie tight end season ever. So I think Bowers is just different. I think that he's going to, you know, be the plant that grows it in a rocky environment and still end up being fine.
Joe, would you rather have Trey McBride for Dynasty or would you rather have Brock Bowers?
Yeah, I had the cartoon bulging eyes when you said Brock Bowers, Dynasty number 2 tight end.
That's consensus. That's across the board that every startup I've been in.
It seemed incredibly aggressive, and I would imagine maybe that changes slightly with this poor landing spot. But when I was going through the names of players, I'd take Bowers over Kyle Pitts, even though I like Kyle Pitts still. I'll take Bowers over T.J. Hockenson, right? Like, I'll take him over Mark Andrews. So by default, yes. And I would take him over Trey McBride as well. Like, I would say I'm a disciple of John and Mario when it comes to my fantasy knowledge. But you guys, both of you, were in on Trey McBride before that breakout occurred and knew more or less that he had the potential for it. So while it seemed like the collective fantasy world was surprised, I wasn't. But I think that was in large part because Kyler Murray really didn't have a whole lot of other options outside of Michael Wilson, who was a rookie and big body target and didn't fit the kind of model that's going to gobble up 100 targets over a 10-week stretch. So, yes, I'm assuming the talent wins out. However, and maybe I'm dating myself, I remember when O.J. Howard was the next can't-miss prospect and the talent was going to win out, and that never did.
Eric Ebron.
Ebron. I'm gonna say, I hope Kyle Pitts doesn't fall into that same equation, but we've had these can't-miss tight end prospects that have missed because NFL, not because Pitts of the talent of the prospect. Though. I'm saying the NFL teams haven't utilized them correctly. Arthur Smith is a terrorist right now in terms of football. So I hope that changes. I hope that's wrong, and I want Brock Bowers to be that guy. I'm just skeptical because we've heard that for the past 15 years now.
Joe calling Arthur Smith the Al Qaeda of fantasy football, an enemy of
he'll love Arthur that Smith too. Yeah, I'm sure he'll tweet me about it.
Yep.
Like, all right, the Dark Knight Rises, Bane.
Jim, I want to talk a little offensive line here because it does matter. All right, the Chargers. It shouldn't be a surprise that they went Joe Alt. Is he 6'8"? Am I seeing this correctly? I don't want to be in his path. Gus Edwards currently the RB1, he's going to be involved, right? Greg Roman's there. That's one of his guys. But is whoever the Chargers take in round 2, 3, wherever it is, the running back that they get, is that going to be someone that could get vaulted up to the early second round, late first round of our rookie drafts?
It certainly could happen because Gus Edwards, we saw a fall off last year. He's like 28 years old, and his whole career he'd been a 5 yards per carry guy. Last year, he was closer to 4. Now, I know he scored a lot of short yard of touchdowns that could have dinged at a little bit, but not a full yard per carry. And the other thing was his broken tackle rate and his yards after contact were down significantly from earlier in his career. Now, getting a second tackle for the Chargers is big. So you have Rashawn Slater on one side, and now you have Joe Alt on the other. That certainly helps. But remember, Gus Edwards benefited his entire career by having Lamar Jackson, RPO threat. I talk about it all the time. You freeze those linebackers for a nanosecond, and if a running back gets downhill, you get free yards for that. That's not Justin Herbert. This is not going to be an RPO base. And even though Greg Roman's there, Lamar Jackson's not. So I think Gus Edwards is very replaceable. I think he's very close to the end of his career, and I think that he could easily be passed. And so, like you said, if they go with another running back, I would be aggressively considering drafting that running back in fantasy.
6'8", 322 pounds. I think I would break in half if he just stood in front of me. That is unbelievable for a lineman. Mario, was he your lineman one in this draft, or you know, was it just the guy that the consensus liked?
Yeah, I was actually, before I had a chance to watch Alt, I was a little concerned by his height. He's actually, he should be listed at 6'9". He's 6'8 and 5'8". They usually round it up if you're 4'8", sure, 1/2 inch, whatever. So 6'9", I get concerned at that point that you're going to have trouble establishing an anchor against some of these short, like a 6'9" guy trying to go against Aaron Donald is just getting, right, you know, lifted up and snapped in half. So it's a potential liability usually, but when I watch Alt play, he doesn't look like he's 6'9". He's a, what they call a good knee bender rather than a waist bender. And he basically can make himself look smaller than he actually is when it suits him. So very flexible for how tall he is. I like J.C. Latham a lot, but he's just a right tackle. And whereas Alt, they might have to move Slater to right tackle because Alt is just that good. They don't need to. They'll take Alt at right tackle, of course. But Alt played left tackle at Notre Dame, even while fellow standout tackle prospect Blake Fisher played the right side. So I think, Alt's going to make a big impact wherever he lines up. And I know a lot of people who want the passing stats won't be happy with the way the Chargers look, but they're not going to be they're not going to have the cold stretches as an offense that they did under Brandon Staley. So I like the way it's going. I like the Alt pick. I think they wanted to their greedy version of the draft is trading back to 11 and getting Latham, but they settled as like, you know, we can't take Latham over Alt.
I'll flake plan because I think the Chargers are going to take Powers Johnson as well in the second round, the center that kind of fell a little bit further. I know they signed Bradley Bozeman. You can slide him to guard, or you can sign the center that I mentioned as well too. So they're going to go back to back offensive line. And then if you took Jonathan Brooks at the beginning of the third round, if he falls to that point, that might be the ideal scenario. And that's maybe the one of the interesting rookie prospects that, okay, you have Gus Edwards. How dare you disrespect J.K. Dobbins, Alan, by not including him in that mix as well. But Dobbins and Brooks, one of those two is your electric running back that would tremendously benefit. We're talking like Zeke with that Cowboys offensive line rookie year. That's one of the best offensive lines right away if they do end up taking the second round.
John, did Mario just call Joe Alt a small 6'9"? Did I get that right?
Yes, and believe it or not, Notre Dame initially tried him out at tight end a little bit when he got to campus too. Unreal.
I want to look a little bit, guys. John, I'll start with you, and I'll head over to Jim in a moment here. I just wanted to talk about projecting forward a little bit. Let's take a look at the second round, what possibly could happen. Quarterback position. Are there any teams, John, that are still looking at quarterback? And Spencer Rattler's the next man up. Could we see him go in round two, or is this something that's probably a little bit more in round three or later?
If Rattler goes tonight, it's a mistake. Rattler's just not it. I've known about this guy since, the Amazon documentary, the QB1 or whatever. He was a huge deal at Oklahoma, immediately gets benched for Caleb Williams. I mean, obviously that was the right decision, but too mistake prone. He's got a great arm, but really nothing else as far as the processing and other tools that you need to be a successful NFL quarterback. He's a guy that should go hang out with the Dude Perfect guys. Honestly, I just don't really see him being someone that's worth investing in. And I think the quarterback pool is essentially dried up. I loved what Michael Pratt did at Tulane, but he's not a conventional NFL quarterback. He needs to run too much. Jordan Travis took a long time to break out, sort of like Jaden Daniels, but also had the horrific injury late this year. Joe Milton.
No love for Bazooka Joe.
I mean, I love Bazooka Joe. I love the idea of Bazooka Joe. Bazooka Joe is who I would make if I was creating a player.
Amazing
half
sprint show.
Yeah.
Just throw it into the barrels from 80 yards away. It's great.
Yeah. He'll be great at the flag football or the drills they do at the pro game, you know, the all pro game. So I understand.
Yeah. They need to invite him for that. But as far as starting for an NFL team on a Sunday, don't do that.
All right, Jim Coventry, the Bills are picking at the top of round two. Let's say they stick and pick here. I know that a lot of people want them to trade back, or they want them to take a defensive player. Let's say they go wide receiver, Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, Jalen Polk. I mean, Troy Franklin, there's some good names there. Which one's the best fit for Josh Allen and the Bills?
None of the above. A.D. Mitchell. That'd be my way to go there, because look, McConkey's got to be out of the equation because they've got Shakir, they've got Curtis Samuel, slot guys. That's McConkey's. I mean, oh, he might line up outside, but he's probably a slot guy. So you need an outside potential X, and not that A.D. Mitchell's an X day one, but that's what they need. And so that would be the player that they would have to target. I think he's the best X right now on the board.
All right, Mario, do you agree with that assessment? And if you do, I would like you to move on to where Ladd McConkey is the best fit. What team coming up in the next 15 picks?
So I agree with everything Jim said. If everything with Mitchell is as it's presented to us, what I mean is there might be a little bit of a weird story with him that's explaining why he's on the board at all at this point. Like in terms of talent, there's no comparison between Adonai Mitchell and Xavier Leggett, or even one of those other, or even in my opinion, like Brian Thomas. Like when Mitchell is really on, he can do all the wide receiver one stuff. You know, he can threaten at all levels. He can run pretty much any kind of route. But the Bob McGinn article was saying that his ability to manage his diabetes has basically driven coaches insane. His maturity apparently has been an issue, and they tell him like, you got to stay on your diabetes management, and he just kind of doesn't. And then he becomes an uncooperative, problematic player in practice, and they start to resent that part of him. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it, and if it's actually a concern. Like, it's not a concern for Mark Andrews. I don't know what the deal is. But Leggett over Mitchell, that's just crazy. By the way, even though I'm saying Mitchell is obviously better than Leggett, I think the Bills wanted Leggett. I think when they traded back with the Chiefs, they were like, it's fine, we'll get Leggett at the 33rd pick. Might be a blessing that they didn't, but I think that was what Brandon Bean was trying to do.
Mario, well, hold on, Alan, real quick. I think the way George Pickens was viewed by the NFL incorrectly, if you want to go that way, is how the NFL is also viewing A.D. Mitchell. Like that's it's the same concept from what I've heard, read, and if that's the case, someone's going to get a steal with Mitchell in the second round.
Yeah, I like that take, Joe. Because
I was going to say, with McConkey, I actually think he can be like a 100 catch receiver at the NFL. I think you'd call him like a flanker more than a slot guy. He's not an X or something like that, but I mean, he'll run right past people on go routes and stuff. He'll break ankles on double moves on the sideline. I think what trends him toward the slot is that he's so great at those easy catches and the yards after the catch, and it's just kind of tempting to give him those looks.
It's the Patriots, right? I mean, I don't want to do the Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola thing.
I make the joke he's the white Cooper Kupp.
Okay, great. But like, the Pats have the second pick in the second round, and we know that they want to build around Drake May. Obviously, they need receiver talent. I think that would be a perfect one-for-one landing spot for everybody.
All right, guys. I want everyone that's watching right now to put in the comments a prediction for round two, because that's what I'm going to go. We're going to go around the table for our lightning round here, and I want everyone. It doesn't have to be a hot take. It doesn't have to be a bold prediction. It just has to be a prediction for day two. I should say day two. It could be anything there. So we're going to go around the horn right here, and we're going to make a prediction. Then we're going to come back, and when you're wrong, I'm going to clip it and send it out to social media. So don't worry, I'm not going to embarrass you too much here. We'll start with Mario, and we'll go round table. Okay, prediction for round two, Mario Puig. We'll come back to you. This is like ordering with my wife at dinner. Okay. I'll take the menu. John McKechnie, you're up. Prediction for round two.
The Falcons make it right. They get a receiver, in the second round, and, they don't actually, make it right actually, you know, because the Michael Penix thing was so bad, but they start working their way, out of the basement as far as their public perception. And I think that maybe they start drafting well and smart and adding around Kirk Cousins this evening.
All right. Terrible prediction, because there was nothing specific there. But Joe, you're up, baby. Show them how it's done.
Well, here, I'll give you two then. I'm going to give you one good one and one bad one. The good one is, of the receivers drafted on night two, so that becomes second and third round, Keon Coleman is going to have the most fantasy value of those receivers. I don't know what landing spot he is, but that's the guy that projects in my mind to be the easiest to accumulate targets, will be a focal point in the offense. And there's a lot of teams that can utilize him that way. So again, I don't know where he's going, but I think Keon Coleman, of the day two targets, is going to be the most fantasy relevant redraft and rookie. I think the Cowboys will take Jonathan Brooks. That's been heavily rumored that Jerry Jones loves him almost to the extent that he is like revealing to reporters that they will take him. That seems like the subterfuge of the incorrect angle, almost to the point where I think the Cowboys will then take another running back in round four. So whoever falls to that point, I can see the Cowboys investing multiple running back spots within the next three rounds if you do indeed take Jonathan Brooks in the second round.
Jim Coventry, lightning round, prediction.
Yeah, Joe and I will be in a bit of opposition. I do think the Cowboys take a running back, but I think it is going to be my guy, Trey Benson. I know he doesn't have any wiggle, but downhill, fast. They need somebody to grind between the tackles. I think he's their guy.
Mario, the waiter sitting here, he's staring at you. He's got his pen and paper. What's your order?
I was going to say what Jim said. I think, by the way, I think Jonathan Brooks is kind of awful. Really, he's not. He's it's total myth around him. He runs like a 4.6, and people are talking about him like he's Jamal Charles. Crazy. He's a slower Rashad White. I agree that Trey Benson will be the running back that the Cowboys pick if he falls there. Maybe Dallas takes Brooks if Benson goes before then. But the other thing I was going to say is, I don't think the Chargers are going to take an offensive lineman at the 37th pick. They're kind of set, I think, at both guard spots and center, unless they get rid of Corey Linsley, who they're still paying quite a bit at for restructuring. So
he is gone. Linsley is gone. He's medically retired.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Because he had that neck thing going on.
Okay. Well, anyway, I guess they could take a center there, but otherwise, I think Blake Corum going to the Chargers at some point makes a lot of sense.
You stole mine, Mario. See, I let Mario go again, and now he steals mine.
That's not a hot take, Alan. That's the most boring thing that every better has ever said.
Here's the hot take. It's going to be pick 37, and I have a plus 700 ticket on that. So let's... At plus 700, it's a little hot.
I'm not seeing this
Michigan guy takes Michigan guy. Hot take, Alan. Good job.
Well, at pick 37, then why is it plus 700? I think that's a good high. I mean, round three is where, you know, the chalk.
Sorry, I got to say, I'm not wrong about Linsley. They restructured his contract in February. He was apparently saying in January that he might retire, but...
Joe giving out fake news.
Oh, my goodness. I'm the Chargers beat reporter. I should be knowing this.
Okay, look, we're getting...
I love Corey Linsley. He's a Packers fan. It's fine.
We're getting demonetized as we speak for fake news. John, this is your chance for redemption. Prediction for day two of the draft.
Okay, so Malachi Corley, kind of a buzzy guy. I think he has his own hive of people that are big fans of his. Fade that. Whoever drafts him is going to end up being disappointed. Slot merchant from a small school, doesn't have the athleticism to really make it work at the next level the way that he did at Western Kentucky. Whoever takes him, they're going to be sorry.
That's how it's done, baby. That is a prediction right there. Hey, guys, okay. I just want to let the audience know, thank you for sticking with us, how you can support this podcast. If you love videos like this, just hit that like button, maybe share it if you want, but certainly hit the like button. And also, if you want to get behind RotoWire's paywall right now, you could do so for free. All our premium content's there, rotowire.com/try, rotowire.com/try. Put in your email. Paywall unlocks for 2 days. There's nothing else to do. If you want to subscribe, you can. If you don't, it just lapses. Guys, we're going to go around. Just tell everyone where they can find you and the most important piece of content you're working on you want them to check out. John McKechnie.
You can find me over on Twitter at @Johns_tailgate. And just minutes but before we went live here for this podcast, I posted my first round fantasy fallout article. So that was every single quarterback, every single receiver, and Brock Bowers, in-depth breakdowns on who they are as prospects and how they fit and how they project for this year and beyond. It's about 5,000 words. I was up late. I was up very late writing that. So please make my time worth it. Read that. It's up for free on the site, or, you know, even better, be a subscriber or get that free trial.
Joe Bartle, in 15 seconds or less, same question.
You can follow me on JB Fantasy Sports on Twitter, and I'll be doing the day two version of what John just did and also staying up incredibly late writing all the different skill position guys drafted in both the second and third round. That'll be live probably at 3 a.m. in the morning because I just don't sleep. But then afterwards, we'll be good to go to read that.
Jim Coventry.
At Jim Coventry NFL, and most of it's video. Tonight, round two of the draft, right where you're watching now. I'll be there with Anthony Servino. Instant fantasy analysis.
Mario, explain this new Twitter situation. I don't know where the hell to find you anymore.
Well, it's pro set formation, as in the halfback, fullback lining up next to each other formation that you probably haven't seen since like 1988.
Tecmo Bowl.
Or pro set, the trading cards, if anyone remembers those. But it's pro set formation, and I actually got to do a bunch of like Outlook stuff for the site. So my next article probably won't be for it'll be like the undrafted, the best undrafted rookies, something like that, maybe on Monday or whatever.
Love that. Okay, I'm at Alan Soslowski, of course, RotoWire YouTube page, and Joe Bartle and I will be on SiriusXM today. If you're watching it live Friday, noon to 2, if you're watching on the replay, sorry you missed it. You can go check it out on the SiriusXM app. Great job, everybody. This was the RotoWire Roundtable. Perhaps we'll come back once it's all over and do it again soon, once we've digested everything and rookie drafts are popping off. Good luck in your rookie drafts. Good luck with the rest of the draft. Hope all of your dreams come true, folks. And you know what? Leave us a comment again with your predictions. We want to hear about it. We'll answer every single comment. Good luck. We'll see you next week.
Noise, noise. The sun goes down on my side of town. That lonesome feeling comes to my door. The whole world turns.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.